You know, when you look at the marketing materials for modern enterprise software, they always sell you this this vision of a gleaming, flawless digital skyscraper.
Yeah.
Like everything is sleek, fully automated, just clicking together perfectly in a cloud.
Yeah, it is the ultimate promise of, you know, seamless, frictionless operations. They paint this beautiful picture where data just flows effortlessly from one glass tower to the next, and everyone is just engaged in this high-level strategic thinking all day.
Right, but then you actually walk into the building, you look behind the drywall, and you realize, well, you realize the plumbing is entirely held together by duct tape, some frayed string, and like about 50 overlapping spreadsheets that someone named Dave created back in 2018.
Exactly. It is the absolute definition of an operational illusion. I mean, organizations invest in these massive multi-million dollar systems, but the spaces between those systems, the everyday operational gaps, they're filled with these incredibly fragile, really tedious manual workarounds.
And that messy behind-the-wall plumbing is exactly what we are exploring today. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're looking at a stack of research and strategic reports that reveal a massive shift happening in operational leadership. The mission here is to explore how we are finally giving everyday people the tools to, you know, rip out that digital duct tape and rebuild their own workflows. We're talking about this movement called knowledge worker-led automation.
Yeah, and before we get into the actual nuts and bolts of how you empower a workforce to do that, we really need to clearly define who we are talking about. The sources are very specific about the term knowledge worker here.
Right. It's not just anybody at a computer.
No, not at all. In this context, a knowledge worker is someone whose primary value to the organization lies in their thinking, their analysis, and their creativity. They are fundamentally paid for their judgment. They are absolutely not paid to execute routine, manual, repetitive tasks.
Okay, let's unpack this because, I mean, if they are paid for their brilliant judgment and analysis, why are they spending half their day wrestling with the digital duct tape?
That's the million-dollar question.
It just feels like we hire people with master's degrees and decades of experience and then force them to spend their Fridays just copy-pasting data between a legacy system and some modern app that absolutely refuse to talk to each other.
It's a massive drain on human capital, and it happens because of the environment they are forced to operate in. You see, the disconnect between that high-level promise of enterprise software and the granular reality on the ground, it creates what the research calls the app ROI dead zone.
The app ROI dead zone. I mean, I love the dramatic branding there, but what does that actually look like in practice?
Well, the app ROI dead zone is a really critical economic concept in our sources. It essentially represents all those mid-complexity business problems.
Mid-complexity, so like the middle ground.
Exactly. These are workflows that are way too complex and multifaceted to be solved reliably by a simple Excel spreadsheet. But on the flip side, they aren't quite valuable enough, or maybe frequent enough, to justify a formal six-figure development project from your central IT department.
So it's this massive gray area. What kind of workflows actually live in this dead zone? Because honestly, I'm picturing almost everything I do before lunch.
Oh, they are everywhere. And they exist across every single department. Look at HR, for instance. A modern HR team has to manage flexible work from anywhere requests, right?
Oh, yeah. Which is a nightmare now.
Totally. That means balancing different time zones, localized tax policies across state lines, equipment logistics. It's a lot. Or look at finance. You have teams of highly trained accountants who spend days manually reconciling cross-entity intercompany charges.
Just because those specific charges somehow fall between the cracks of the massive ERP modules they bought.
Exactly. They just don't fit perfectly into the system, so a human has to bridge the gap.
Oh, or procurement. The sources mention procurement teams tracking vendor onboarding steps. I have seen this firsthand.
Oh, it's notorious for this.
Right. The information is just scattered to the wind, like some of the compliance documents are buried in an email thread, the tax forms are sitting on some obscure SharePoint site, and the actual status is tracked in a master spreadsheet that, you know, only one person in the whole department knows how to unlock.
Yeah, and even IT itself isn't immune to the dead zone. I mean, internal IT teams spend hundreds of hours triaging low-priority service requests, like just granting access to a specific shared drive that just don't warrant a full, heavy IT service management workflow.
So they just handle them manually through chat messages or
whatever.
Exactly. It perfectly matches an analogy directly from the text. These workflows are the leaky faucet nobody fixes. It's a constant tax we pay on our time. They drive us completely nuts, but we just kind of live with it. But here is my question for you.
Sure.
If these leaky faucets drive us nuts and they actively bleed productivity across the whole company, why has IT historically just left them dripping?
Yeah.
Like, why not just put a developer on it and fix it?
Well, it wasn't that IT didn't care or didn't want to help. It was just pure math, a fundamental economic barrier. In the traditional model of software development, creating an automation required highly specialized technical teams.
Right, expensive teams.
Very expensive. The time, the cost, the formality required to initiate a project, it meant IT could only tackle really large problems with massive, defensively sound business cases.
I see.
If a workflow costs the department, say, $5,000 a year in lost time, but it would cost IT $50,000 in developer hours to build a custom app to fix it, IT is never going to approve that ticket.
So the math just didn't work. The problem wasn't big enough to get the funding. It was annoying enough to slow everybody down. And the workers themselves didn't have the tools to self-solve, so they just kept carrying buckets of water to catch the drips.
That economic barrier, that mathematical impossibility, is exactly what is vanishing right now.
See, here's where it gets really interesting, because the math is changing practically overnight, thanks to generative AI and the massive evolution of the Microsoft 365 ecosystem. The sources explain that these technologies are completely collapsing the cost barrier to building software.
Yes. The tools to build enterprise-grade solutions, they no longer live exclusively in a specialized IT lab. They are sitting right on the knowledge worker's desktop right now.
Just waiting to be used.
Exactly. And the sources break this down into what they call the automation continuum. It's critical to understand that this isn't just one magic button you press. It's a spectrum of capabilities that really scales with the worker's comfort level.
Let's explore that continuum, because it's not just about snapping your fingers and having AI do your job. It starts very small.
Bro, it starts with just everyday assistance. You have Microsoft 365 Copilot embedded right in the applications people already use, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. This is the entry point. It builds familiarity.
Right, like asking it to summarize a doc.
Yeah, it helps workers generate an outline or analyze a small data set, which crucially gets them used to thinking in structured steps and prompting a machine for an output.
And from there, you step up slightly into things like Teams workflows and loop tasks. For anyone unfamiliar, a loop task is essentially a collaborative, interactive block of content, like a checklist or a table that syncs in real time, whether you paste it in an email, a Teams chat, or a document.
It's super seamless.
Yeah, and this level of the continuum is where you get your first hands-on exposure to actual logic, like setting up a simple trigger, for example. When someone checks off this loop task, send an automatic notification to this Teams channel.
And then the continuum moves up into significantly more sophisticated territory.
Yeah.
You have Copilot Studio, where workers can create custom conversational agents. Basically, think of them as highly specialized chatbots that connect to specific department data to answer complex questions.
Oh.
And finally, you reach Power Automate, which is a comprehensive low-code environment for connecting multiple disparate systems and applying deeply structured logic without actually writing traditional code.
Because this entire continuum is just sitting there, already licensed and available to the worker, it completely flips the script on how we fix the leaky faucets. I mean, we are moving away from the old model where IT identifies a problem, builds a tool in secret for 6 months, and does a big top-down rollout. Now we are shifting toward a grassroots solutions development mindset, where the people doing the work are the ones building the fix.
Exactly. And this cultural shift requires a new type of role. The research identifies the emergence of the expert knowledge worker.
The expert knowledge worker. How is that actually different from a regular knowledge worker? I mean, everyone likes to think they are an expert, you know?
Well, it's not defined by a specific job title or a promotion or anything. It's defined by a unique combination of deep domain expertise and a new kind of critical thinking. These individuals act as the bridge between what the business actually needs to achieve and the technical execution required to get there.
So they know the pain points intimately.
Right. They understand the nuances of the workflow deeply because they suffer through it every single day. But now they are applying what the sources call lightweight engineering disciplines to actually solve it themselves.
Lightweight engineering disciplines. Mm-hmm. That sounds incredibly abstract, almost like an oxymoron, honestly. I want to ground this. Let's look at the real-world example provided in the text to show exactly what this looks like in practice and prove that we aren't just talking about theory. Let's talk about the TIPI workshop automation.
The incremental pathway, or TIPI. Yeah, this is a perfect illustration of a team fully escaping the dead zone. So TIPI runs professional development workshops. Historically, managing the logistics for just one of those workshops required multiple fragmented manual steps that ate up hours of administrative time.
Typical dead zone stuff.
Exactly. But an expert knowledge worker on their team used the desktop tools we just discussed to automate the entire life cycle of the event.
Let's trace the actual mechanism of how this works, because the sheer amount of cognitive load this takes off a human's plate is staggering to me. It all starts with a simple SharePoint list, right?
Yeah.
A workshop gets registered there. What happens next?
Think about the mechanism here. The automation isn't just following a daily schedule. It's actively listening to a specific cell in that SharePoint list. The moment a human confirms a workshop and flips the status in that cell, it sets off a massive domino effect.
Like magic.
It really is. The automation instantly drafts and sends the customized invitation emails, it handles all the calendar holds, and it distributes the introductory course materials to the participants. No human administrative intervention is needed to get the workshop off the ground.
That's already great. But then the actual workshop happens.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it's over and the status in SharePoint is updated to delivered, the automation wakes up again. It reaches out, grabs the raw, unstructured audio transcript of the entire workshop, uses an AI model to create a digestible summary of the key takeaways, and then files that summary in the appropriate secure client folder based on the naming convention.
It's incredibly smart, and it goes even further into relationship management. It automatically sends a curated follow-up email to the participants with additional resources. It also pulls in a sophisticated analysis of the transcript combined with their Mentimeter feedback.
Right. And for context, Mentimeter is a live, interactive polling and engagement tool used during presentations.
Exactly. So the AI synthesizes that live poll data with the spoken transcript to gauge how well the material actually landed with the audience.
And my absolute favorite part, the automation actively manages the human facilitator. Like, it doesn't just manage data, it manages people. It sends the facilitator an automated nudge exactly 1 week later, reminding them to do a personal, high-touch follow-up with key attendees.
And don't forget the chatbot.
Oh, right. The team even built a conversational agent, a custom chatbot, where any employee can just ask natural language questions about the status of a workshop or update details without having to dig through that massive master SharePoint list.
It is a remarkable ecosystem of automations. And crucially, it was built by someone whose primary job is not writing software.
Which brings up a massive point of friction for me. I'm looking at this TP example, and I'm putting myself in the shoes of an average worker. Like, are operational leaders suddenly expecting a marketing manager or an HR director to become a traditional software developer? Because expecting someone with a background in corporate communications to suddenly learn C# or Python seems like a recipe for total burnout.
The sources anticipate this exact concern, and they are crystal clear on this. No, you are not expecting your marketing manager to become a traditional coder. The expert knowledge worker is not writing thousands of lines of syntax, provisioning servers, or managing complex database architecture.
Thank goodness.
Right. The AI tools handle the heavy lifting of the code itself.
So what are they actually doing if they aren't coding?
They are acting as the architect. They are applying those lightweight engineering disciplines we mentioned. For a non-technical person, this means learning basic version control, which is essentially just knowing how to save a working copy of your automation before you tinker with it, so you can roll back if you accidentally break something.
Okay, that makes sense.
It also means learning how to do user testing, actually running a few dummy scenarios with a small test group before deploying your new automated workflow to a team of 50 people. It's about bringing a level of structure and rigor to how you solve problems.
But if the AI handles the coding and the tools are this accessible, just sitting right on everyone's desktop, I mean, what is stopping an entire company of 5,000 people from just automating everything they do tomorrow?
The capability gap. And this is arguably the most dangerous part of this entire technological shift. The research emphasizes that the most critical barrier to success right now isn't the tooling. The tools are ready. The barrier is a massive deficit in design thinking and problem decomposition skills across the average workforce.
Problem decomposition.
Love.
Taking a massive, messy, ambiguous human problem and breaking it down into incredibly small, logical, sequential steps that a computer can actually understand.
Exactly. Because for the last 20 years, knowledge workers have been heavily trained to follow existing processes, not to design them. They know how to execute the steps, but they don't know how to step back and evaluate the structural logic of the steps themselves.
Right.
And without those cognitive skills, you run into a massive trap. You end up doing what the sources call automating a mess.
automating a mess, just digitizing a broken, terrible process at the speed of light. You know, I've actually seen this happen. At a previous company, we had a vacation approval process that required three different managers to manually sign off in sequence. When the team got access to automation tools, they just digitized that exact flow.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It didn't get better. We just got bottlenecked three times as fast. We literally weaponized our own inefficiency.
That is the perfect illustration. If you don't use design thinking to redesign the workflow first, you just recreate and accelerate your existing inefficiencies. Think back to the vendor onboarding example we discussed earlier. Let's say it's currently a broken sequential process. Step B cannot happen until a human manually signs off on step A, and there are absolute no escalation rules if that human happens to go on a two-week vacation.
The classic single point of failure bottleneck.
Right. If a knowledge worker just uses Copilot to automate those exact steps without rethinking the architectural design, they still have the sequential bottlenecks. They still have no parallel processing where legal and finance can review documents simultaneously. They still have no escalation rules for when someone is out of office. It is the exact same fundamentally flawed process.
It's just faster and louder.
Exactly. It creates a Wild West environment characterized by inefficient use of AI computing tokens, massive redundancy where three different departments build the exact same automation, and total unmanageability.
It's like Copilot or Power Automate is the builder. The builder handles the syntax, the hammer, the heavy lifting of putting the materials together. But the human must step up and act as the architect handling the logic. If the architectural blueprint is fundamentally flawed, the AI just builds a bad house much, much faster.
That's a great way to put it. And this paradigm shift demanding that everyday workers act as architects is jarring. It requires structured decision making. A worker needs to know how to frame a problem, map a process visually, and critically, they need the self-awareness to know when an architectural problem is actually too big, too deeply integrated into the company's core systems, and they need to hand it off to IT for the heavy last mile lifting.
Which brings us directly to the operational leaders listening to this deep dive. If the capability gap is the disease, this massive risk of building bad houses faster and creating a Wild West of shadow IT, what is the cure?
Yeah.
How do organizations actually manage this transition safely?
The cure starts with leadership fundamentally hitting the pause button. The clear call to action in the strategic research is that leaders must pause before just launching these new AI tools to the whole company and telling everyone to go build automations and save time.
But don't just hand everyone a nail gun and walk away hoping for a mansion. Yeah.
Exactly. Leaders need to get personally deeply involved in the workflow design. They need to choose a few high friction, high visibility workflows and actually sponsor protected time for their teams to sit down and redesign them from scratch. Before touching any technology, they have to identify the real underlying constraints.
Like what kind of constraints?
Well, is the process slow because of a lack of automation? Or is it slow because decision rights are incredibly unclear? Is it because the data is fragmented across four different non-communicating systems? Or are there competing departmental incentives? If you don't address those structural human barriers up front, your automations will fail instantly.
And where does the traditional IT department fit into this new world order? If they aren't the ones billing every little app and fixing every leaky faucet anymore, what is their new job description?
IT's role undergoes a dramatic, highly strategic shift. They transition from being the bottlenecked developer, where every idea goes to die in a ticketing queue, to being the ultimate guardrail provider.
Guardrails. Setting the rules of the road so the cars don't fly off the cliff. Let's define what those guardrails actually look like technically.
IT focuses heavily on things like data loss prevention, or DLP, policies. This ensures that an enthusiastic HR worker doesn't accidentally build an AI agent that summarizes the executive payroll spreadsheet and emails it to the entire marketing department.
Yeah, that would be a disaster.
A huge disaster. IT also handles API governance, which is basically setting the strict traffic rules for how different software applications are allowed to talk to each other and share data. By creating these secure sandboxes, IT enables the business side to innovate and experiment at speed, safely within defined parameters.
So, we know the goal. We want to empower the workers, bridge the capability gap by teaching them to be architects, and establish strong IT guardrails. To make all of this happen sequentially, the sources lay out a very specific, intentional, four-stage organizational roadmap. Because, I mean, you can't just expect this cultural shift to happen organically at the water cooler.
No, the intentionality is what separates successful transformations from chaotic ones. The first stage of this roadmap is awareness. But it's not just about sending a company-wide memo saying, hey, we bought Copilot. It is about making the full landscape of tools visible and demystifying what they actually do. A procurement officer cannot leverage a tool if they don't understand its specific capability profile.
Right. And once they know the tools exist, how do they actually use them without breaking things?
Yeah.
That leads to stage two, skill development. And the text is incredibly pointed here. This is absolutely not about user interface tutorials.
No, spending 3 hours showing someone which buttons to click in Power Automate is a total waste of time because the UI changes every 6 months anyway. The skill development has to focus entirely on closing those cognitive gaps. Organizations must train workers in problem decomposition, teaching them how to break a big problem into a logic tree. They need training in process mapping and how to think critically, like a systems designer.
Makes total sense. And once you have a few brave people building these new workflows, they can't just exist in a vacuum. Which brings us to stage three, establishing support structures.
Yes. This means intentionally building communities of practice within the organization. You create spaces, whether it's a dedicated Teams channel or a monthly showcase where these newly minted expert knowledge workers can share their successes.
Like a show and tell.
Exactly. And more importantly, they can provide reusable assets and templates to others and help troubleshoot when someone's automation gets stuck in an infinite loop. It transforms problem solving from a solitary struggle into a collaborative capability.
Finally, as these grassroots automations get more complex, what happens when a marketing manager builds something that suddenly the entire global sales team relies on? That brings us to stage four, maturity paths.
Maturity paths acknowledge that not every automation is created equal, and not every worker will reach the same level of expertise. This stage is about creating clear, defined tiers. Crucially, it includes an official process for promotion.
Promoting the automation, not the person, right?
Right.
If a grassroots solution like that Titipi workshop automation becomes wildly successful and mission critical to the business, there must be a pathway to hand it over to IT. IT can then harden the code, attach it to enterprise databases, and manage it officially, freeing the knowledge worker to go solve the next problem.
So synthesizing this entire massive journey, we are looking at a fundamental permanent shift in how daily work gets done. We are finally moving out of the frustrating manual sludge of the app ROI dead zone. We have incredibly powerful AI and automation tools sitting right on our desks, which completely changes the economics of fixing our own operational headaches.
But the technology alone will not save a broken process. We have to actively navigate the capability gap. We have to avoid the trap of automating a mess by learning to become true architects of our own workflows. And that transformation requires an intentional four-stage roadmap from leadership, backed by secure, invisible guardrails from IT.
It is a massive evolution in what it means to be an employee. And the strategic text leaves us with a final, incredibly provocative thought to mull over as we close. As these generative tools become ubiquitous across every industry, will the ability to architect a solution transition from a specialized niche skill to a baseline professional competency for every single knowledge worker?
It is a profound question to consider. I mean, think about it 20 years ago. Being able to use a spreadsheet or navigate email was a specialized skill. Today, it is a baseline expectation. The ability to cognitively decompose a business problem and guide an AI to automate the solution that may very well be the minimum requirement to even apply for a job in the modern enterprise a few years from now.
Wow. So the next time you find yourself manually copying and pasting data between three different screens, or wrestling with a workflow that feels like it's held together by duct tape and sheer willpower, take a step back. Look at that messy plumbing through a new architectural lens. The tools to fix it are probably already sitting right at your fingertips. You just need to step up and draw a better blueprint. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.